Welcome to Email Marketing. My name is Neil Wilkins. Now, we know about email. We know what email is. I'm not here to teach you email. It would be presumptuous of me to kind of think that I could really teach you anything about this omnipresent technology that has, well, for many of us, been here and present in our everyday lives, both working and in leisure, for what feels like forever. So that is not the purpose of this session. The idea of this session is to explore the, I guess I could call it, resurgence of email in a marketing sense over the last 12 to 24 months. And this, for me, is quite an interesting one. I grew up with email marketing back in the day. And of course, for many of us, that has been overtaken by other forms of digital or online marketing. Obviously, most recently, the whole social media sort of revolution, really, which has changed everything in terms of marketing communications. But email marketing has held true. Email marketing has been something that, whilst less fashionable in more recent years, has actually returned some very, very good results and huge amounts of value for those who have continued to figure it out, for those of us who have kind of really sort of never kind of mistrusted it, if you like. Now, this is an old technology. As I say, I'm not here to kind of explain to you what email is. I know that you use this. You probably live and breathe this on a daily basis. First email marketing was sent back in the late 1970s by a chap who was working at the time for DEC, Digital Equipment Corporation. He sent an email blast. This was Gary Thurk, and he sent an email blast to around 400 people as a promotion for the company's computers. And incredibly, because this was at the time so cutting edge, so revolutionary, that email blast, 400 people, resulted in over $13 million in sales. Now, wouldn't that be a return? Can you imagine these days sending an email to 400 people and getting that kind of a return? Well, depending obviously on what organization you work for, you know, that might be possible. But for most of us mere mortals, that is really a pipe dream. So a lot has changed since those times. This is back in, I guess, the good old days of, you know, this new sort of brave new digital technology that was really going to, at the time, revolutionize the way that we communicated on a regular basis with our target audiences. Now, a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then. And it's interesting to really note that the number of people using email as a business tool has continued to grow year on year. Now, you really wouldn't imagine that because there's been obviously the distraction of things like social media and other platforms and other technologies. And so you wouldn't really imagine that this was still a growing entity. According to Statista, in 2020, email marketing revenue stood at around $7.5 billion. And by the end of this year, the expectation is that we will pass the $10 billion threshold. So it's very, very unlikely, really, that you can find another channel of marketing and communications that has been so consistently growing, such a consistent performer over many, many years as email. And it is still there, providing great value to many, many organizations across the world. There's really no question, really, that it's this return on investment that many people have found over the years that has continued to see email at the kind of the forefront of people's minds when they're planning their marketing campaigns, when they're planning their product launches. And nothing really has changed over quite a number of decades. But, and here's a really, really key thing that brings this kind of conversation right up to date here in 2023, people currently are only spending an average of 10 seconds per email. And that is an email that has actually made their inbox. So this isn't mail that goes into their junk or their trash automatically, or, you know, their sort of organization's IT systems have already filtered it out. This is 10 seconds for an email that has actually landed in their inbox and has in effect been opened. Statista.com, so reliable resource. This research and this data gathered across a whole range of different industries and sectors. Now, whether it's 8 seconds, 10 seconds, 12 seconds is kind of irrelevant really for us as marketers. The point that we need to understand here is that if you send an email and the email gets opened and you're sat there as a marketer thinking, hey, my job is done, I'm a successful email marketer, then you're not. That is not the end of the game. That is far from the end of the game. In fact, that is only just really scratching the scratch of the surface of the potential that your email has. 10 seconds. Can you imagine that? How much information can you get into 10 seconds? Can you inspire a call to action, a button click? Can you really educate or inform or entertain somebody within 10 seconds? It's a very, very short period of time. And that's the challenge that we face. So whilst this is a growing industry, it's a technology that has been here for so long, and many of us can't remember time before email and before it was part of a standard marketing communications mix. But even though it's in the mix, there's improvements that we can make. There's a better return on investment that for most of us we can achieve. And there's more value that we can provide from email back into our organizations. And that really is the point of this conversation today. And we are still seeing year-on-year increases. Every year, according to Statista, since 2017, email has enjoyed year-on-year increases. Now, you could say, well, isn't that great? Yeah, there's justification for me to do it. But of course, if you aggregate that up to every organization in your sector, and then you take that up another level, every sector in every industry, and then you take that up another level, every industry in every country, and then up another level, every country on the planet using email, then this is an incredibly crowded space. How many times a day do you check your email? Just think about that. Is it always on? Do you get notifications and alerts every time something pops onto your desktop or onto your phone? Most of us do. It is something that's always there in our kind of view or in the palm of our hand. And yet very, very few of us actually pay very much attention at all. So whilst we see this as growth, one of the biggest challenges we face, not only that point about time, so we've got to get people's attention and keep it for longer than the average 10 seconds per email, because we want to stimulate activity. We want to stimulate a behavior. We want to get people to click through to somewhere else to get more of the amazing stuff that we're offering. But of course, everybody else is doing the same. So it's a busy, chaotic, often very, very low engagement space. So challenges afoot for sure. And that is what we need to begin to address. We know the opportunities there. This is the most proven digital tool we've got at our disposal. And what we need to be doing is kind of figuring out very much the best practice how. I mean, when it comes to online advertising and promotions for products, for services, for launches, for your next event, to get people to sign up to your next webinar, to just communicate with them on an ongoing basis, you know, we are seeing higher click-through rates than on social media. This is commonly known. A lot of the research will say that, and a lot of us spend a huge amount of time every single day in social, and we almost get blind to the fact that actually email does have cut through. The click-through rates that we'll see through targeted, very precise, very clear, very succinct email can significantly be higher than the click-through rates we'll see on social media. Again, Statista, another reliable source here, say that in Belgium and in Germany, where they've seen click-through rates 5.5 and 4.3% respectively, compared to, now get this, the 1.3% global average click-through rate for social media during the same time period. This was kind of data from last year. So between sort of 4.5% and 5.5% click-through rates compared to social media global averages of 1.3%. So that's kind of like 2.5 times at least better click-through rate using email. But that, I'm making the assumption here, is only for organizations who are able to retain the attention of somebody long enough to inspire and to advise and to engage enough to get that click-through rate. So just because you send out a lovely, polished, beautifully crafted email does not mean you're going to get that click-through rate. So there's something more that must be going on here today with these successful click-through rates to actually achieve the improvements that, you know, those kind of countries are clearly evidencing. So it is about trying to figure out the how, the when, the why, and the what. All those kind of questions that you ask as you start to craft against this opportunity, crafting something that looks creative, that looks appropriate, that is going to be meaningful and engaging for your audience. In 2020, marketing email open rates were the highest on Fridays across every single sector on average. 18.9% of the total number of subscribers opening such emails on Fridays. The lowest rate, interestingly, was on Saturdays at 17.3%. So not a huge difference globally across every sector, according to the statistics, across a number of days. Now, you can just get swept along by these great big generic statistics, and you know a lot of us do because it is a starting point. Now, my challenge to you here is that I'm going to challenge you to say you need to understand what's going on with your audience, okay? So if I was to take and was to send out for my target audience, who are people like you listening to this, if I was to send out a regular email on Fridays when the global statistics are showing that this is the highest open rate, this is the highest engagement point on a Friday, then I would be failing in my work. The reason being is because when I look at my audience, actually Fridays is the complete and utter opposite of the global statistics. When I look at my data, I look at the engagement rates, I look at the click-throughs to my website, I look at the podcast listening, I look at all the other data, Friday is actually my quietest day. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because for me, it's this constant reminder to not look at the global generic statistics. Yeah, they're fine to get you thinking about what's important, but you've got to understand your own data. So step one here is look back in at what you've done before. Figure out, when I've sent an email before, what happened? If I've done a campaign, even if it's years ago, what was the timing of that campaign? What was the day? What was the time? What was the content? Did I send out different versions of it to different target personas, different target segments, different demographics at that same time? And if I did, what did I observe? That data is going to be far, far more valuable than taking the generic kind of big picture, you know, industry-wide kind of numbers. And too many of us are relying on those big numbers, which may be completely at odds with our local reality. So the key here is to begin at home, begin with your data. And as we start in 2023 to really, really hone in on what we would call first party data, you know, the data that we hold. So the email accounts, our customer records, our customer relationship management systems, stuff that we've got locally here. This is the key stuff. Okay, so it's fine to be led initially by some stuff outside to get us thinking, but the closer we can get to our own data, the better. And once we've established that, we can then begin to plot and craft a successful email marketing campaign. Now, there are many, many sources of step-by-step tips and tricks and tools and, you know, email secrets you'll see if you Google this. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways you can do this. One very reliable way of doing it has been documented quite some length by Sprout Social. And I just want to take you through very, very briefly some of the steps. And if you're taking some notes around the process here, which I'm going to do a deep dive into some of the elements of this process in a minute. But some of the key areas of this process are really, really kind of not rocket science. These are quite straightforward, but they are super important in terms of the way that you begin to build a process around your email marketing. It isn't just a case of choosing a software platform, and I'll talk about those in a minute, crafting a lovely glossy email and pressing the button at a random point in time and then monitoring what happens. There needs to be more science behind this. And the key thing as I'm talking through these that I'd like you to think about is, at what point and at what role is email playing in my overall strategy for communications? Okay, so the email is not the end game. And whilst we're deep diving into email right here in this session, it is only a single tool as part of a broader journey, as part of a broader experience that you're crafting for your customer. Okay, so we've kind of got to ring fence the expectation here of what this email is going to do. Too many of us rely on one or two channels and think, hey, I'm a marketer, I'm a communicator, I'm a business owner, I'm an entrepreneur. I've done a few emails, did a bit of social posting. Great, I'm communicating. Without actually thinking that these are distinct, unique, and often for many organizations, standalone channels, which would far, far benefit from actually being joined together into a route map of experience for the customer. So that's what I want you to think about, is where does email sit in my customer's journey? Okay, so as we go through these various steps, I just want you to have that at the back of your mind. Where is this email sitting in my customer's journey? In other words, what is the job description that this email has? So if my email campaign or my email strategy was part of my business, part of my organization, I'd give it a job description. So it was kind of there performing a function for me and really helping the team to kind of do better stuff. What would that job description be, and where would it be sitting in the customer's journey? So let's talk about the steps that we're going to be focusing on here. So step one is choosing a relevant email list. Now, I'm going to talk in a while about the low value of buying contact lists. Okay. Now, if anybody is here from a data warehouse and say, hey, Neil, you're wrong because we've got some really high quality lists, then you might be the exception to the rule. But most data warehouses, most data holdings or contact lists that you can buy are very, very low value. They're either out of date, they haven't been cleansed, they might not have been collected appropriately. They tend to be low quality. So choosing a relevant email list, generally we're talking first party data. So data that exists around your target audience. And that probably is existing customers, connections, partners, and stakeholders in and around your organization. But then starting to really think about, okay, does this email that I want to send out or this message that I want to convey via email, does it apply to all of them? Or do I need to segment it down a little bit and choose maybe a subset of this overall list that I'm going to send this email to? And here's a little clue. The answer is yes. Okay, it really is yes. We're going to be talking multiple emails here. So when we talk about sending an email, we're talking about sending a number of different versions of the same email, but slightly tuned. And I'll talk about that A/B testing in a moment. So we've created a list of email connections. Then it's about obviously designing the email, making sure that it is very personalized, very relevant. It needs to make you come across as current, relevant, and informed. Those are three kind of little tricks to making sure that it is going to really hit the spot. There's going to be a hook in there. We'll talk about content and subject lines a little bit later. And it needs to kind of be conversational. There's the next thing. This isn't a monologue. Okay, so when you send an email, yes, you might have a load of stuff to say, but what you're probably actually looking to do is to create the first of maybe a number of steps of dialogue. So inspiring potentially a conversation, because wouldn't it be great if you got some feedback? Wouldn't it be great if somebody clicked the button to respond? Wouldn't it be great if there was a little bit of a poll or a survey and you got some feedback or you got a reply? You're only going to get that if you pose questions. You're only going to get that if you end a particular paragraph on a question mark rather than a full stop. And that's a key thing. Being conversational in your marketing, and particularly in your email marketing, is another key way that subliminally you are going to be attracting a conversation and engagement. If you're doing this to just preach and just to push content out there, what you've done is you've basically said, here's my content, I'm folding my arms, I'm not accepting a response back, this is all about us. Now, can you imagine the response on the other side when they see that? It would have to be something super powerful to cut through. Most people are not going to be able to cut through with that kind of an attitude. So what we're also looking to do here is create follow-ups. With an email, the chances are, because of the time of day, because of the lack of attention of your particular audience, because of technology or just bounce backs, soft bounces, things like that, the chances are your first press the button to distribute this email is not going to get through to everybody. So creating follow-ups, both where you resend that particular email, but also where you actually create a follow-up, almost like a second version or, you know, following up. So it becomes a little bit part of a series where people can sort of expect something really, really high value and good from the next one, because you've kind of preempted, there's a little bit more value to follow. So if you read this one, if you click here, we're going to give you this, and then just stay tuned for the next version, or we're going to follow this one up with a special offer or something. So always setting the precedent that there is something more to follow is really key to a successful email campaign. Make sure the emails are coming from a real person. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that you're not going to use automation. I'll talk about automation a little later. But what it is the intention here is that this is coming from a real person. Even if you are a big brand, when we talk about personalizing, we're not just talking about personalizing who it's going to, but we're talking about personalizing the who it's coming from as well. So email needs to be, because nobody's going to be conversational with a brand or something that isn't going to resonate with, a human being. We like to get into conversations with humans. And so the way that this email is crafted, the way that there's a sign off, the way that it is going to be positioned, is that it's really, really important that what you're doing is you're crafting it such that the signature kind of says it's from an individual. You're crafting it such that if they feel they want to respond, they're kind of responding not to this blanket sort of brand position, but they're actually coming back to an individual and or a team. So it feels a little bit more engaging at a human level. That's really key. The other things you can do to test this out, and again, test out whether this works for you, you know, whether this kind of advice and this guidance for how to craft these things actually works in practice. One of the ways you can do is what's called split testing or A-B testing. So, for example, you are sending half of one version of your email to one segment, and you're sending the same email, but just one thing different to another segment. And it might be the headline. It might be the title or the subject line. It could be that the lead image is different, just one thing. Because, of course, if you do two things, you don't know which one of those two made the difference. But if you just change one thing and only one thing and send them at the same time, because, of course, the timing of the send could be the difference. So you might want to send one this morning and send one this afternoon and see the difference. Exactly the same email to a different audience, in effect. But that A-B testing allows you to then test. And why would you do that? For continuously improving. So the next time you send it, you've got that little bit of a nuance as to what worked better and what was more effective, what got a better click-through rate, what actually engaged more, what got a better response. And actually, even to the point of what got opened better or more easily from a particular version. And then you can learn and you can improve from there. And of course, ultimately, all of this needs to follow email regulations. So all the typical GDPR kind of best practice, and really, really avoiding the whole kind of spammy kind of email where you send a blanket email out to everybody just because you can. And yes, of course, you can. But as we know, and as you wouldn't want to receive yourself, the whole idea of personalization is obviously key as we start to build this up. So let's do some deeper dives into some of the best practice right here, right now, because that's quite a generic approach. Some steps, if you've never done an email campaign before, just some steps, hopefully, to get you started. But this is where the real kind of value lies here. And this is all very, very heavily researched sort of guidance here. So first thing you've got to do when you're thinking about planning is think, is this email campaign or is this particular email I'm sending out, does it have the purpose strategic? Am I looking for a strategic value here or a tactical value? Now, by strategic value, I mean, is this building the essence of our brand? Is this looking to get some value in the medium to longer term? So I'm not looking to promote anything or sell anything necessarily. I'm looking to build the engagement. I'm building a community. I'm building some long-term two-way value. So value to us as a business, but also value to the audience. Or has it got a tactical purpose? Is this something that is going to give short-term value? So it might be promoting an event or a product or a launch or something like that. And by value, tactically, I mean value to the audience as well as to you. The two things do not sit hand in hand well in a single email. So you're very unlikely, very, very unlikely, according to the research, to see both a short-term gain and a long-term value. So you've got to decide as you're planning this particular campaign, this particular email shot, is it for tactical or is it for strategic? Now, here's this question, where in the customer journey does this sit? Okay, now people have got to be very, very clear where this is sitting in the customer journey, because the essence, the style, the tone of voice, the kind of little nuances within the email are going to be affected by where in the customer journey this email is going out for. So, got three stages of the customer journey: awareness, conversion, retention. If it's in the awareness stage, and it could be strategic or tactical, but if it's in the awareness stage, the concept is you're helping the customer to become more educated, more informed about the value that you bring, period. That is it. It's the awareness stage. So you're adding value to their understanding of the value you're going to bring. If it's at the conversion stage, the email is going out to help you get sales and or conversions. So you can decide what a conversion is, but it's the difference between somebody being a prospect, so a potential customer, and to be somebody who's actually committed to you. So they've spent money with you or they've signed up for something. You can decide what that definition is. But it's critical that if you're deciding that your emails are going out to help conversion, then that is what they focus on. Okay, so you can't just build awareness and convert. You've got to decide whether this email is in the awareness stage, building confidence, building trust, or it's designed to convert. In other words, the sole purpose of it is to trigger that action so that they actually purchase or sign up. And the third phase of the customer journey is the retention phase. And in this phase, retention means that you're retaining existing customers, and email, as we know, can have a part to play in the retention phase. So this would be where you're going back to your existing customers and again, segmented down as personal as you can get it, knowing what they bought and how they've engaged with you in the past. So look at their customer records as you segment and precisely, you know, pinpoint this, the quality and the content within the email to their particular needs or the value you think you can bring. And so what it is at the retention stage, it's keeping you on their radar. Now, when we talk about newsletters, email is often kind of confused with this idea of a newsletter, but that is a retention stage tactic. Okay, so the idea of sending a newsletter to your customer base by email is that you're looking to retain them. You're looking to stimulate potentially a point where they might come back and repurchase. You're probably looking to keep engaged because they might just share you with a family friend or colleague or a peer, in which case you've got some advocacy there going on, which is great. It just might be you just want to build your database for future value. So if it's at the retention phase, you can imagine the kinds of stories you would tell in your email are going to be fundamentally different to if it was positioned in the customer journey at the awareness stage, where they don't really know that much about you. At the retention stage, they should know everything about you because they've already committed. important, therefore, that you decide where in the customer journey is this email positioned, because by definition, then it will start to shape the kinds of content you can put in. What is the goal? Okay, is it opens? So you just want people to open it and read it. Is it clicks? So you want to stimulate behavior. You want to get them to click through, or is it both? You've got to decide. I'm not going to tell you which is best, which is worst, which is whatever. You can decide for the purposes of your campaign. But the key thing here when you're planning is to do some smart goal setting. What are our smart targets for this email that we're going to send out? And I do mean really smart. So within a period of time, a measurable, tangible number that's achievable, it's realistic, but it's also time bound. It's got to be time bound so that you know when that kind of life cycle, if you like, of that email is done. That's really, really important. And more broadly than that, what would a desired outcome be from this? How do you want the world to be different? How do you want your community or your customer base or your business to be different on the other side of sending this email? And if you say, hold on, Neil, that's a little bit kind of high level and strategic. Well, yes, it is. But this is a point of contact with a customer. It's important. So how do you want the outcome to feel? How do you want this to look both to you and to the audience? Because you've got to really spend some quality time reflecting on that desired outcome, because that is your North Star. That's what you're aiming for. It isn't just about sending a periodic email out and saying, oh yeah, we've done our email for this month, and thinking that that's a good job. I'd say probably it was probably worth not sending that email out if that's the attitude. So having a really clear desired outcome begins to manifest the sort of outcome on both sides, the value that is possible here. Now, this is another thing as well, is that this is a journey. This email should be considered really a journey to the next step in the customer's journey. So this is the journey potentially to a landing page and beyond. So where do you want your customer who's receiving this, or your prospect who's receiving this email, to go next? Because if you're just sending it out because it makes you feel good and makes you feel like you've done your job this week, that's not enough. They want to know where to go next. So carefully choreographing the next step in the journey is critical. Please don't press that send button until you've decided precisely where you want people to go, having read that email. Because if it's clear to you, it's going to be clear to them. And that landing page is part of this planning. You need to be designing that landing page so that it joins up the journey. So it kind of gives what was promised in the email and takes people to the next step of engagement with you. So email marketing, even at this kind of standalone little kind of, you know, sort of description, if you like, of this as a channel, fits into a bigger process that we need to clearly think of. And that is really often where the software comes into play. You know, a lot of us have used or have done, or tried or dabbled with the likes of MailChimp, for example. And I would always say, you know, if email marketing is new to you, have a play with MailChimp. Go to MailChimp.com and have a little play around. Free version of MailChimp is available for you to allow you to play with all of the different tools and all the different possibilities. It might not be somewhere that you're going to end up. You might decide to go for something like HubSpot or Salesforce, and there are many, many, many others. But the trick here is to really understand what's possible. So when you're kind of ready to press the button on your email, having something that will manage the outcome, that will manage where do they go next, that will manage how many people went through this process, that will manage some real-time reporting through a dashboard, that will potentially auto-unsubscribe, manage those accounts, because you've got to, as part of this process, to be squeaky clean and not spammy. You've got to give people a chance to not receive from you again. In other words, they've got to be able to unsubscribe. And if they do, do you want to be manually doing that yourself? Probably not. Do you want the opportunity, if this goes really well, to scale up? Yes, you probably do. So having something like MailChimp as a software tool will potentially allow you to scale this thing and get better and better and better based on evidence. So not just a gut feel that, oh, I was really proud of that email. It must have been really good, but I don't really know how many people click through. Something like MailChimp will tell you in real time how many people have opened and clicked and where they've gone and what they've done. So it's about kind of thinking of email marketing as much as, you know, you're very proud of the email creative and the thing that went out, also thinking about, okay, it is about a process here. And actually, where does this process fit into the broader process of this journey? Now, as soon as you start talking software and you start talking about scalability and you start talking process, there is a danger that it becomes impersonal. Okay, so the one next thing I'd like you to just make a little note of here is keep it personal. Now, once you do start to scale things up, once you allow automation to come into the process, it does have the potential for taking away from that human-to-human connection. Because ultimately, really what would be perfect, wouldn't it, would be that you personally, you as an individual, could send an email directly to each and every one of your customers forever. Wouldn't that be great? Because then there's real connection there and you're part of the journey they have of engagement. Now, if you're working for a, I don't know, high-end consultancy or something where you only have half a dozen maybe customers, then that probably is going to be practical. That would be doable. But if you're selling a commodity product to consumers, for example, and you might be selling thousands of these, there's no way you could do that. But having the ethos and having the strategy that we're going to keep this personal, no matter how much we scale it, no matter how much we are going to automate what we do, we're going to keep the essence of this being a small business or a small team communicating with a small segment of our overall database. Keeping that ethos and having that as a mantra is a really healthy way of building into the future. And of course, it requires you to really understand your segmentation. And by segmentation, I mean really understanding and prioritizing, you know, the most valuable customers and avoiding this kind of buying a cold list and actually thinking about, okay, so who are the customers we really want to retain? And are there any others out there who we haven't actually engaged with yet that we could use email to begin to communicate with? If we could gather their information, gather their data by getting them to subscribe to our mailing list or to subscribe to our webinar series or to, you know, grab their email address at a conference or an event so that we can then kind of get the permission to start to build a valuable relationship with them through personalizing, through keeping, you know, really tight to the definition of their segment. And by segment, I mean really breaking it down to a persona level. So not just socioeconomic data, not just company size and job title if you're in business-to-business marketing, but really getting to the core of who these people are. Because, you know, really being able to personalize means that you have to be able to understand who they are, because you can't personalize if you're talking to a generic sort of demographic definition here. You've got to be thinking of these people as real people and picture them, imagine them in your mind's eye, visualize them as you're writing your content, as you're producing the timing. What are they doing when you send this? At the moment they say you send this particular email, be it a Friday afternoon or a Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., what are they actually doing? And if you know them intimately because you've done your research, you've listened, you've gathered feedback, you've spoken in maybe focus groups or one-to-one with people, you kind of know what people just like them are doing, when they're doing it, their interests, their kind of real persona profile. Then you can craft content that hits them at the right time with the right kind of valuable information. And of course, you can use things like preference selectors where people can tick the boxes of, if we contact you again, what would you like to hear about? Tick this box and this box, so that they can self-select and self-segment, if again, if you're listening, and maybe use polls and things in your emails to allow them to kind of, yeah, really fine-tune who they are. So you might get it about 80% correct. But if you give them a chance to then, you know, sort of respond back to you with, well, I particularly like this kind of content from you, and this was really valuable, but I don't want that sort of content. If you then listen and feed that into a database, be it a spreadsheet or a big CRM system, it allows you then to continuously improve your segmentation, which of course continuously improves the value and the hitting of the right messages with the right people at the right time. Which brings us into how then we're going to plan our content, because there are some best practice. There are some very, very simple rules that you can follow. And five things, according to crowdcontent.com, that make email marketing, when you're drilling it down to a persona level, really successful, is that you need to think of five words: authority, consistency, timeliness, restraint, and shareability. Now, each one of those is kind of self-evident, I guess. Authority, yeah, thought leadership, great one for email. Consistency, keeping it on brand, tone of voice, style, fonts, everything like that is really, really appropriate. Timeliness, needs to arrive at the right time. So understanding your customer persona is crucially important so they get the information and value from them at the right time. Restraint. Yeah, just because you've got all these messages you want to share, cherry pick the best bits, make sure the value goes to the right people at the right time. And shareability. Always, always, always make your content shareable so people can pass it on. I mean, we've been doing this for many, many years in social media. You know, this is where the whole kind of influencer and advocacy marketing sort of came about. It was all about shareability. But the same is true in email marketing. So make sure you keep it there. It is really, really important. Also, design it for all screen sizes. Keep the main message and call to action above the fold, according to HubSpot. So HubSpot say, basically, remember your 10-second test. Yes, of course, you've got to allow for an opt-out and know your GDPR compliance, et cetera, et cetera. But if you've got a key message and if you've got a call to action button in the email, don't rely on people scrolling to the bottom. Remember, they've got to get the message. They've got to be able to respond within 10 seconds. So keep it above the fold. That's old style advertising speak for saying keep it right at the top so people don't have to scroll down. They need to be able to see it there in their faces. So it's very easy to interact with your email on any screen size they encounter it. So you might have the data that says this particular persona is predominantly using a small screen. So they're looking at their emails on a smartphone, and we've got the data to prove it. And you will see that through your software that you're using. So learn and improve every single time you send out. And of course, one of the big things here when we're content planning is avoiding going into junk. So generic greetings such as dear such and such or my friend, you know, those things that you see where you get this really kind of spammy mail that is really clogging up your junk folder. And it often is has that in it. You've been blind copied in from somebody who sent around, you know, this particular email to, oh, my friend. Well, of course, it's not your friend. You don't know them. They don't know you. And you've been blind copied anyway. So you've been caught in the junk filter. But the point is, it has been caught in the junk filter. So make sure that you are personalizing. And again, all these software platforms allow you to add in a first name and a surname so that every time you send it can be personally addressed to that individual. And that's important because otherwise it could be perceived by their software as junk. So it never gets opened. Avoid as well bought contact lists, even if you decide, well, Neil, you know, I'm going to put my email at the start of the customer journey at the awareness stage, and we don't have those email addresses, so I have to buy a contact list. You know, everybody who attended this particular event, I've bought that list. Well, that's okay, but just be aware that quality of list is vitally important to check before you actually purchase it. And always ask the seller of the list what the bounce rate is. So when this, and they need to show you evidence of that, because if it's a high bounce rate, and that can be a soft bounce rate or a hard bounce rate. Hard bounce rate is where literally that person's email address does no longer exist. A soft bounce is where some kind of firewall is preventing that email from getting through for now. So it's been a justifiable email address. It kind of is still there, but you're not getting through. And lots of low quality lists will see a soft bounce rate that is actually quite high. So find out what that is before you buy it. Also, when you're content planning, think about one emoji at a time. Multiple emojis do not work well when it comes to junk filters. They tend to really struggle to sort of get into inboxes. So maybe one emoji is appropriate, but definitely avoid exclamation marks. Even if you've got, you know, the most exciting story, the biggest product event launch that you've ever done, avoid an exclamation mark, particularly in the subject line or the title. And if you miss an unsubscribe option, so you're not doing this and complying with all of the kind of regulations that are applying right now, then you will probably end up in the junk filter. Email software is very, very clever right now, and it's getting ever cleverer with each software update. So if you don't have a very obvious unsubscribe option at the footer or in the footer of your email, then the chances are you may well slide into junk. So just double check that your system and things like MailChimp force you to do that properly anyway. So you may well be using a software that, you know, encourages you or doesn't let you send email out without getting that bit right. But if you're doing this manually, give people an unsubscribe option at every time. And then, of course, then having planned it, having started to create your content plan, now it's all about copywriting. Now it's all about putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. The guide is to get them to the call to action, the CTA. Guide them using your email to the call to action. The email is just the start of the journey, and it needs to integrate with the landing pages. So think of this as being something that is kind of almost the first step in a chain of events. Don't think of this email as being a standalone entity. Now, I've said this a few times in different ways in this talk, but it is so, so important. Having sent this email, if there is an associated landing page, and that might be literally a landing page, so almost like a little micro area of your website that's kind of slightly different to the other pages that you've got, might not even have a menu sort of area, it might be a pure landing page, then that's great, because what that does is it extends the life of this email into a space that you can then control. Because once you've got that click through, then what you can do is start to really, really add some value. Because as we know, customers really don't care about what your email is offering. All they're interested in is what's in it for me. If I've spent this 10 seconds reading this email and I'm going to click on that click through, I want to know that there's some serious value to me, be it time saving, being a great offer, being a little bit of information that's going to make me look or sound good if I pass it on. Something in that has to be relevant to them. So there are some certain words that you can start to put into your subject lines that get this kind of interest peaked at the very, very start. So the top five most effective subject line keywords, according to optinmonster.com, are, and based this is based around 21 billion emails sent by 2,500 brands. So this should be pretty accurate. The top five words that you can use in your subject lines are upgrade, just, content, go, and wonderful. Just think of those for a moment. Upgrade, just, content, go, and wonderful. Now, don't ask me why some of those words are in there and other words that are similar aren't. These are just statistically the words that are going to give you the best engagement, the best hook, the best click-through rate, according to these 21 billion emails that have been analyzed. And the ones to avoid, and these really are to avoid, do not use these in your subject line. The word free, the word money, or the word help. Okay, so copywriting. The rest of the kind of storytelling is very much down to you. But avoid those in your topic or subject lines, because those are going to be the make or break of whether or not you're even off the starting blocks or not. And so let's assume now that you've used your system or you've done your manual sending. So the emails have all gone out. It's about obsessing about your key performance indicators. So whether it's the time of day, it's the day of the week, it's the certain style of email that you've sent, it's a particular topic, it's whatever it was. We talked about A-B testing, this multivariate testing, where you've got this one thing that you're changing just so you continually learn. The key with measurement here is all about monitoring trends. Look for patterns, not necessarily just a snapshot of, hey, that one performed really well. Look, click-through rates better than all the others. Great. Well, I'm just going to follow that. Watch the trend. So in other words, when you do it again, watch how it differs from the previous time you did it, and see what you can learn from that. So if you're doing a campaign, watch each and every email that you send out and see if you can plot things on a graph. Those key performance indicators you do need to become really obsessed with, because the beauty is in the detail. It really is. As I said earlier, you can be as super proud of a particular sort of campaign in terms of the creative that you like, but it's the trends that you're able to spot behind the things that you measure that are going to be the make or break of how your next campaign is going to perform. So we've talked about planning, we've talked about the reasons for cutting through, we've talked about the position of the email in the customer journey. So some of these things are really key things that most marketers are not thinking about right now. We've talked about some subject line matter in there. But the key things I just want you to kind of remember as a little bit of a leave behind here as we round this one off is that even though people often use the word email as newsletter, remember it's not a newsletter. It's neither probably newsworthy, nor is it a letter. So nobody cares but you. Okay, this is the harsh truth of a lot of marketing that we do. Nobody cares as much. Well, I certainly don't care as much as you, but actually nobody really cares because it's what's in it for them. So with that in mind, second point is, what will you improve next time, every time? So that's a really, really key Kaizen approach, this continuous improvement approach. What will you improve next time, every time? So every single time you send out an email, I was going to say newsletter, that almost fell into my own trap. Every time you're going to send out an email, think about what you've learned from a previous email that you've sent out. And actually, in this email, as you watch it and as you monitor the trend versus the last time, what are you going to improve and do differently next time? And you need to do that every time, because you will get sharper and sharper. You'll get better return on investment. You'll be providing better value to your customer and your target audience every single time if you do this every single time. So the onus is on you, but the value is also coming back to you. Third point, inspire dialogue, not monologue. So that whole idea of, we've got a launch, we want to tell you about it, put it out there, is long gone. That's very, very old school email marketing. We do not do that this year. This is all about stimulating a dialogue, a conversation. So more question marks and full stops, more opportunities for people to respond in a way they'd like to respond, and clear calls to action to get them to the next point in the journey. Fourth point is reporting intelligence, not numbers. When you start to put this stuff into practice, your organization, your manager, your team are going to start to pay attention. But they're not going to pay attention to the numbers because they won't really understand the numbers. You know, if you say to them, oh, I've got this bounce rate, or I've got this CTR, I've got this, that, and the other, it's like, what, Neil? What are you talking about? I don't really understand that. So report intelligence, not the numbers. And by that, I mean is it's down to you to evaluate the numbers, reflect upon them and say, okay, this is what this really means. And this is what we're going to do differently next time. And that's intelligence, because it's informing better decision making. So report intelligence, not numbers. And remember that the email process, my final point here in this session, the email process is a mini customer journey in itself. Okay, so whether you decide the email is at the awareness stage, building awareness of who you are and what you do, or whether it's to help convert, so you're looking to do it to drive sales, the two are not the same thing, or whether you're doing it to retain your customer, to build the loyalty and the advocacy, and that is not the same as the previous two. Remember that the process you're creating here for your emails means that it is a mini customer journey in itself. And so by doing that, it trains you into the habit of remembering that the email is just the call to action to get your customer to the next step in their journey of engagement with you. And often that is the most appropriate way of actually getting the very, very best ROI from this amazing tool that is available for you.